mystery. Well, my friend, feeling in the mood for a mystery? Good. But I have one tonight that proves the fact that it's not only people that have a bit of mystery connected with them, but also objects. Now, locked in the vaults of a bank in France is one such object, a rare object of art, the goddess of the seven joys. The goddess is only some 15 inches high, a stone statuette of an elegant woman. Her face oriental, expression mysterious, value, it is priceless. Now, where's the mystery about a small statuette being locked away in a vault? I'll tell you. You see, it's not to guard her from men, but men from her. Our story begins in Marseille. Monsieur Pierre Leclerc is talking to his old friend, retired professor of archaeology, Jean Gravelet.
Pierre, I do agree with you. It is perfection. Observe her elegant thinness, the smoothly flowing lines of her robe-like garment, and the quaint high cap on a proud head, and see her expression. It's Mona Lisa's, enigmatic, as though she knew all the mysteries of the Orient.
I would say it was carved by a master in the 11th or 12th century. Tell me, Pierre, how much did you pay for this work of art? A fortune?
Only 9,000 francs.
Oh, a bargain, indeed a bargain, and in excellent condition. No wonder you are excited.
The gentle greenness of the stone and the smooth...
Let me feel. She's a goddess. Which one I do not know. They worship many lesser divinities in those far-off days. One, I remember, was called the Mistress of Pleasant Places. Perhaps it is she.
I must find out her name.
The shopkeeper, he said it was his brother's statuette.
That's what he claimed, yes. He said his brother was dying and asked him to sell the goddess.
Dying?
Yes. It was a mysterious illness. The doctors failed to diagnose it. His brother, he said, died in great agony. And here's the strange part. As the brother reached his last moments on this earth, he called for his goddess. He died with it in his arms.
As time went by, Pierre Leclerc and his old friend Jean Gravelet discussed the goddess more and more. And the more they did, the more they found it harder to resist her slim charm.
She is indeed lovely to touch, my goddess. She is beauty immortalized in green, smooth stone.
Let me caress her coolness, Pierre. You have her every day. I can have her only when I come to your house.
Share her loveliness with me, my friend. Let your eyes soak in her oriental beauty.
Oh, you are kind. Just think, Pierre. Think of the wondrous glory of the model must have possessed. A glory enough to send men mad.
I often dream of her.
And the bigger fool you, Pierre, a man of your age.
Oh, but methinks your wife does not approve of our little friend, Pierre.
I do not approve. Ever since that thing came into this...
Marie, please do not refer to her as that thing.
I shall call her what I wish. Ever since that thing came into this house, John, you two men have done nothing but drool over her. It's unnatural. Two grown men.
Speaking for myself, Marie, the goddess has enslaved my heart.
Pierre, either you get rid of that thing, or I leave this house.
Marie.
I am a very old friend of you both, Marie. Therefore, permit me to say that all this is distressing, unnecessary.
I hate that statuette. I hate it.
You see, Jean, my dear wife is jealous of a piece of stone.
Yes, I am.
But, my dear...
It is preposterous, yes. But I am jealous of her.
Oh, you too regard the goddess as a woman.
Jean Gravelet, I regard this goddess as a rival.
That night, when the quarrel ended, old John Gravelet left the Leclerc house and went home. In the early hours of the next morning, Pierre and Marie Leclerc were awakened suddenly.
Yes?
Leclerc speaking.
Pierre, it is Jean.
Jean? What's wrong? Oh,
come quickly, Pierre. I am ill, very ill. Fever in pain. Come quickly. Bring her with you.
What? Bring who?
The goddess. Bring the goddess with you. I am dying.
Pierre reaches his old friend's bedside. He places the green goddess in the convulsive hands of Jean. The old man strokes her smooth, cool beauty.
Jean, tell me, why did you want her?
I know now why the shopkeeper's brother wanted her. Asked for her when he was dying.
Why?
Why? Don't you know?
But before the old man could answer, before he could explain the mystery why men ask for the goddess just before they die, a smile crept over his white face. The goddess slipped from his lifeless grasp. The coroner's report on Jean Rabelais was death by cause or causes unknown. You see, he died of a mysterious malady that defied diagnosis by doctors. The verdict was not received kindly by Marie Leclerc.
Pierre, you must get rid of it.
I refuse.
But can't you understand? She's evil. She caused John's death. She killed him.
Oh, you're mad, woman. Mad. You're talking stupidly.
I'm talking the truth. The goddess is evil, deadly. She killed him just as surely as if she'd put a bullet through his brain.
Oh, Marie, calm yourself.
She killed all who love her. John Gravelet, he loved her. Pierre Leclerc, you love her. You love her more than you love any breathing woman, more than your wife. That's why I'll smash her to pieces.
Take your hands away. Take them away. You won't touch her.
Hurry! Hurry!
No!
Look at my face.
I'm sorry, Maria. I beg your pardon, but... High fever, unconsciousness, yet I can tell he's suffering pain, great pain. But just where, why, it puzzles me.
Doctor, I know what the matter is. She caused it.
She?
You remember the death of Jean Gravelet?
Yes, very puzzling.
She caused that too.
Madam, who is this woman?
The goddess. The green goddess.
The green goddess? I don't understand.
See, there she is on the bureau. See her smile, her evil smile. She's smiling in trial. The manifestation coming from that figure.
Yes. If that is so, why don't you destroy
her? I will. I'll destroy her now.
Wait. Your husband is trying to speak. Where is she? Where is she? He's wanting you, madam.
No, not me. He wants her.
My goddess, where is she? I want my green beauty.
That statuette?
Yes, but if he touches it, he will die.
Is that you, Marie?
Yes, I'm here, Pierre.
Give her to me.
No, I won't give her to you. I'd rather die than touch her.
I want her. I want her.
No, no, anything. Anything but her.
He's unconscious again.
Doctor, is he dying?
I don't know.
Madame Leclerc was a determined woman. She refused to give her husband the green goddess. Days passed, and then one morning she slipped out of the house to buy bread. When she returned...
Pierre, are you... Oh, she's beaten me. She's beaten me. Beaten me. Beaten me.
Somehow, Pierre, during her absence, had found strength to crawl out of bed, reach the bureau, and return in his dead hand. Yes, the green goddess.
Madame Leclerc, I am a reporter. I heard about the green goddess. It reminded me of something. I looked up my newspaper files and found this, which appeared after the liberation of Paris. Read it.
A reward will be paid to anyone returning or giving information leading to the return of a 13th century Chinese statuette, greenish in color and approximately 30 centimeters in height. It is a rare object of art, known as the Goddess of the Seven Joys.
Please read the rest of it.
Warning. This statuette is coated with sulfide of arsenic. The finder is advised not to handle it except when wearing gloves.
I have traced its history, madam. Every time men handled the goddess, more poison was absorbed into their bodies through their hands. Then, when the end came, the pain grew. Their bodies craved more. For each absorption would deaden the pain. That, madam, is how the goddess kills.
Slightly cruel story, wasn't it? The goddess of the seven joys had been created centuries ago by the sect of celestial wisdom, impregnated with arsenic, and then turned loose in the world to wander among men, killing all who caressed her. Yes, I just had to know why she now smiles in the darkness of a vault. Because I love the mystery.
Let us follow one mystery with another. Mallard, makers of world-famous radio, now present The Hummingbird Mystery. What makes a hummingbird hum?
Yes, what is it now?
You know the hummingbird.
Yes, but what about the hummingbird?
Why does the hummingbird hum?
Well, what does it matter anyway?
But I want to know, Daddy.
Well, how should I know how a hummingbird hums? I suppose it makes a humming noise in its throat as it flies along.
Like you do in your bath sometimes.
Yes, I suppose that's right.
You're wrong, Daddy.
I know. Sounded like somebody telling me I was wrong about the hummingbird.
So you are. You don't know why the hummingbird hums as it flies.
Well, upon my soul. However, since you know so much about it, suppose you tell us what makes a hummingbird hum. There's some mystery here, Betty.
There was a mystery, you mean. It is a mystery no longer. Science has solved it. The mystery has been solved by electronics. It is the oscillation of its wings which makes the hummingbird hum.
What oscillation, Daddy?
Oh, vibration, very fast movement. And I suppose somebody actually counted the oscillatory rate of the hummingbird's wings.
Not somebody, but something. The ultra-rapid beat of the hummingbird's wings was counted by an electronic tube.
A Mallard tube. I might have known it. What those Mallard people can do with valves is absolutely uncanny.
And that is quite right. What Mallard scientists have achieved with electronic tubes or valves is indeed uncanny to the lay mind. There are Mallard tubes which can count the normally uncountable. There are tubes that can sort out colors. Others that can reproduce scenes enacted in total darkness. There is virtually no limit to the applications of Mallard electronic research. That is why, when you buy a Mallard world-famous radio, you own the most highly developed radio of modern times. A radio perfectly designed and equipped.
I love the mystery. All the world loves a good mystery. So here's one, my friend, that will send little shivers up and down your spine. to make ourselves quite comfortable, presently will become a witness to one of the strangest mysteries of my experience. The mystery of the wishing death. The wishing death. Just how right are the Aborigines with their pointing bones when they will their enemies to die? Is there any scientific basis for the singular phenomenon of a man dying simply because somebody else pointed a bit of a kangaroo's bone at him? I saw a man die a few hours after he'd been pointed at with a bone. A white man, a highly educated professional member of this town. His name was Desmond Innes. He belonged to the same club, the Blackfriars. Desmond Innes and George Bascom were sitting at a small table near the window. I could easily hear what they were saying.
Care for another whiskey, Desmond?
No, thanks, old man. Selma wouldn't like it.
That's what I like about you, Desmond. You're so considerate towards other people's wives.
Well, your wife did invite me to dinner. Never do to go there smelling like a cake of scotch.
You're very fond of Selma, aren't you, old man?
Fond? It's a masterpiece of understatement. You know perfectly well I'd have married Selma if you hadn't got in first. Lucky devil.
Do have another whiskey, Desmond. Nothing like drowning one's sorrows at a time like this.
You talked me into it. Waiter, scotch and soda, make it two.
By the way, old man, did you ever see a thing like this before? Picked it up at a curio shop.
No, I haven't. What the devil's it supposed to be?
It's a pointing bone, used by the Australian Aborigine. Nothing to it. A bit of kangaroo bone and a lock of Aborigine hair.
What do you know?
They gave me this card with it. It says, "This is the pointing bone used by Aborigines in the settlement of tribal disputes and feuds, especially in matters appertaining to the moral code. It is necessary to point the bone in the general direction of the enemy, and the victim usually dies within 4 days.
That is, of course, presuming one is an Aborigine. I'm definitely not an Aborigine, George, so you're just wasting your time pointing that darn thing at me. Besides, I'm not an enemy, am I?
Of course not, old man. Still, it's interesting, don't you think? I sit here like this and point the bone straight at your heart. Let me see. This is Monday. Now, unless you are dead by Friday, I propose to go right back to the shop for a refund of my money.
But please put that thing away, George. You know, I have absolutely no intention of dying for at least another 40 years.
Oh. Sorry, Desmond. Of course you have no intention of dying.
And yet, Desmond Innes, the gentleman who had absolutely no intention of dying within the next 40 years, committed suicide less than 8 hours after that conversation took place at the Blackfriars Club. The police found his crushed and mangled body lying on the footpath in Compendium Lane. He'd fallen 200 feet from his apartment in the Compendium building. Now, that's what I call a very interesting coincidence. Oh, did I say coincidence? Hardly. Let's go back to what happened after they left the Blackfriars Club.
Why, George, you're early.
Hello, darling.
Dinner isn't nearly ready yet. Hello, Desmond.
Good evening, Selma.
Take Desmond into the lounge, George. Give the poor fellow a drink.
No, I've got a better idea, Sally. You and Desmond have a drink while I garage the car.
Well, that's what I call a real bit of inspired thinking, George. What do you say, Selma?
Well, if you don't mind a burnt dinner, it's okay with me. Come along, Desmond.
I'll only be 5 minutes.
Be as long as you like, old man. We won't mind. Will we, Selma?
Desmond, it'll have to stop.
Stop? Why, Sally, that's absurd. It just can't stop. Can I stop loving you just like that? Can you stop loving me?
It's gradually driving George out of his mind. Can't you see what's happening to him?
Then why does he constantly invite me over here to dinner?
At least he knows where we are and what we're doing. I think he gets some kind of malicious pleasure in having you here watching both of us.
It's a form of masochism, self-torture. I didn't realize that George was like that.
You've come to be an obsession with him. He can't think straight anymore. It's very serious, Desmond.
Listen, there's only one thing to do. You must come away with me before it's too late.
You know perfectly well I won't do that, Desmond. You seem to forget I have two children.
And you seem to forget that we're in love with each other. If George can't take it, that's too bad for George.
George shouldn't have to take it, and he won't take it. After tonight, Desmond, I'll never see you again. It's the only sensible way.
You mean we're finished?
It was a mistake ever to start. Here, have a drink, and for heaven's sake, try and raise a smile.
It's important that I should have you, Thelma. To me, that's the most important thing of all.
You're very selfish.
Is that your final decision? I mean about us.
There's no other way, Desmond. If we don't break it up now, I'm afraid of what might happen. Really afraid, Desmond.
Now, what in the world have you got to be afraid of, Thelma?
Oh, why, George, you startled me.
Well, you don't have to creep in, old man, like a Secret Service agent or something. Thelma was just saying she was afraid the dinner would be spoiled.
I see.
Well, don't you believe me?
Of course I do, Desmond. Let's have dinner and forget all about it. What you say?
After dinner, the three people returned to the lounge for a few more drinks and a little, shall we say, double talk.
George, just why did you point that bone at Desmond?
Oh, by the way, old man, have you got that thing with you?
Yes, it's in my pocket, I think. Yeah. I could have sworn I put it in my pocket. Must have left it at the club. Doesn't matter.
Well, never mind. George, after tonight, I won't be seeing you for a while. I'm going away.
On account of his health.
Oh, that's jolly bad luck, old man. Didn't know you were in bad health. Perhaps you drink too much.
Perhaps I have been drinking a little too much. I have a special reason for it. Not every day that one is condemned to death.
You mean the pointing burn?
Of course. Certain death within 4 days, you said. Yeah, you're a peculiar bird, George. Who would have suspected that you were a killer?
Don't say such stupid things, Desmond.
I mean it. Now, if I should happen to die, say, tonight, it'd be all your fault, old man. You know, you simply can't go around pointing bones at people. It's not done.
You sound suspiciously like a man who is about to commit suicide, Desmond. Doesn't he, Thelma?
Maybe he's just a little tired.
Come along, Desmond. I'll drive you home.
That's awfully decent of you, George. Goodbye, Thelma. And thanks for everything.
Good night, Desmond. And good luck.
They found Desmond Innes' body in the early hours. There was an inquest, of course. George and Thelma both testified that the deceased had been drinking rather heavily and that he had fallen into a condition bordering on melancholy. Nothing was said about the pointing bone. The official verdict was that Desmond Innes had taken his own life whilst of unsound mind. And there the matter ended. Almost. However, a few days later, I was sitting at my favorite table in the Blackfriars when George himself strolled in. I spoke to him. Oh, excuse me, aren't you George Baskin?
Yes.
I thought so. Haven't been a member very long.
That's right.
Sit down, have a drink. The waiter, two beers. Is that all right for him?
Thanks.
By the way, Baskin, have you ever seen a thing like this before?
Don't think so. What is it?
A pointing bone. The Aborigines use it, you know. They point it, and then you go away and sort of die. Interesting, don't you think?
Quite. What will they think of next? By the way, where did you get it?
Oh, remember a cove named Innes? Threw himself from a compendium building or something of the sort.
I know. I drove him home that night. He was drunk.
I inspected the body. I found this in his hand. Strange, don't you think?
Quite. I know nothing about that, of course.
excepting that I saw you showing this thing to Innes here in the club the day he died. In your evidence at the inquiry, you said you didn't go up to his apartment with him.
That's right.
Well, if that were so, how did Innes manage to get possession of this curiosity?
I must have given it to him.
But you just said you hadn't seen it before. Do you think something might have taken place in his apartment? A struggle, perhaps?
I refuse to discuss it any further.
Oh, you don't have to. With me, Bascom. But two police officers have just entered the club. Look, they're over there by the door. I think they're beckoning to you. Non-members, too. What is this club coming to? Of course, the strange part of it was that I'd made a successful shot in the dark. I hadn't found the pointing bone in a deceased hand at all, but on the table at the club where George Bascom had inadvertently left it that afternoon. Bascom broke down under police examination and confessed that he'd thrown in his the ninth floor of the compendium building. Thelma Bascom took advantage of her legal position and refused to testify against her husband. Ladies and gentlemen, can I interest you in a perfectly good pointing bone? It has a very good history, having already killed one unfortunate victim within the short space of 8 hours. Oh, on second thought, perhaps I'll lock it away in the old oak chest alongside my African assegai and the skull of a Borneo ape man. I like to preserve these interesting mementos, you know, because... yes, you've guessed it. I love a mystery.
If you enjoyed the mystery story you've just heard, you'll like this one, too. Mallard now presents The Wine and Spirit Mystery. The Fine Wine and Food Lovers Society is holding its monthly luncheon. In accordance with custom, a guest, who is an acknowledged connoisseur of wines, is called upon to pass comment when the coffee and liqueur stage has been reached.
Mr. President, I would like first of all to congratulate the Society's cellar master on his faultless appreciation of vintage and his good fortune in being able to procure wines of such mature age. Now, it's clearly apparent to any connoisseur that the wines served today were laid down at least in 1921 or 22.
Order, order!
Who is that laughing?
Mr. Vintner, our cellar master. I just can't understand it.
Gentlemen! Mr. President, I desire to apologize to our guest speaker, but my sense of humor overcame my manners. The wines provided today were laid down less than 12 months ago.
Oh, wrong.
It's impossible. No. Gentlemen, I repeat what I have just said. The wines tasted today, wines with all the characteristics and qualities of age, were in fact laid down less than 12 months ago. Yet I will defy any connoisseur to detect the difference between those wines and others that have been cellared for 30 years or so.
Mr. President, this is a matter entirely beyond my comprehension. It's a very deep mystery.
A mystery indeed. How could an aging process, which normally took years, be accomplished in a matter of months? For the solution of the mystery, we must look to the electronic research scientist of the world-famous Mallard Organization. The answer lies in ultrasonics. Sound waves of such high frequency that they cause incredible agitation in liquids. Mallard has perfected ultrasonic generators which perform a host of extraordinary functions, from the acceleration of chemical reactions to the mixing of metals, from drilling glass to decreasing the virulence of germs or emulsifying oil and water. The same painstaking research into electronics which made possible the ultrasonic generator lies behind world-famous Mallard radio receivers and Mallard valves. In radio, as in other electronic applications, the best is Mallard.